is in the building.
Evening, night, whatever time it might be. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Cho Show Podcast here on SmallReport.com. I'm your host, JG Smooth. And if you did not watch the Champs Heart of Texas Bowl, shame on you, because you missed a whale of a game. It was by far one of the best games I've ever seen personally. Definitely the best UCO game I've ever seen. If you did not see it, you saw one of the greatest comebacks that I'm going to venture to say here. I know in recent memory, as far as UCO goes, probably maybe all time. What I saw in the game Saturday was nothing more than pure heart, pure guts, determination, overcoming adversity. You know, they always say sports mimics life, and if that is indeed true, then the young men that came out with a win Saturday definitely has a good start to that, because UCO won the Champs Heart of Texas Bowl 41-34 over Angelo State. And what was nothing shy of a spectacular comeback. They would find themselves down by 18 early in the fourth, and you know, a lot of teams could have folded. A lot of teams would have folded, but they did not. UCO did not, and they proceeded to score. They outscored Angelo State 28-3. Again, 28-3. In the final period, you know, UCO had kind of been stagnant there. They started off the game, quick 10-0 lead on a 30-yard field goal from Alex Covedo, and then they sent on a touchdown run by Chandler Garrett, who was finally healthy again, which is good news. And then Angelo State received to score 24 straight points. So the offense there, you know, they had a fumble. Will Collins had a fumble. The offense is kind of stalled. There seemed to be no real rhythm. Marcus Jones, Gene Upsall, D2 lineman of the year candidate, who entered with 34 tackles for loss and 15 sacks, had 2 sacks in the first 3 quarters. Was definitely affecting the pressure. But in that fourth quarter, I know for a fact that he did not have a sack, and he probably didn't have a tackle. You know, they came, and I'm lost for words. I was lost for words then. I'm lost for words now. So basically, what happened here is, pretty much 2 minutes into the fourth quarter, offensive coordinator Christian Hood called a spectacular trick play. Will Collins threw a screen pass to Johnny Bizell. If you don't recall, Johnny Bizell was the former quarterback that was leading the battle in the spring for the starting job, has since moved to receiver. He caught the screen, immediately turned and launched it 58 yards to Clay McKenzie for a humongous gain right there that set up a touchdown. Set up a touchdown, 5-yard pass to Dante McGee, who had a heck of a game, by the way. Dante McGee, again, was an all-conference guy, mainly as a blocker, because I think he only had about 2 or 3 catches entering the game. Did have a nice 5-yard touchdown catch in the back of the end zone. It was actually nice when Collins rolled to his right, kind of folded it up there. There was 3 UCO receivers and 2 Angelo State defenders, and it was a nice soft pass, and it landed into the hands of Dante McGee. Then they proceeded. They proceeded to hold the Rams to a field goal, which was huge because the Rams had a good drive going. The UCO made a great goal line stand, and then forced a 21-yard field goal. So that made it 34-20 with 10:13 to go. Then on the following drive, on a crucial 4th-and-3 from around midfield, I believe. Collins found McKenzie for a first down on 4th-and-3. I will say Clay, while he only had, I believe, 25 yards on 11 carries, definitely did his damage in the receiving game, converting a number of crucial 3rd downs. And his 4th down here, he had 6 catches for 76 yards. And then literally on the next play after that, Will found Dustin Boskus. Who again? Dustin Boskus was another guy that was kind of banged up in that Emporia State game. Dustin Boskus had a big 53-yard touchdown. It was one where he almost dropped the pass. It was almost a case of being too open, because let me tell you, Dustin Boskus burned his man off my screen right there. It was wide open, and then looked like he had it, lost it, juggled it about 2 or 3 times before finally reeling it in and then walking into the end zone there for the touchdown. So that made it a 7-point game with 7:22 to go. The defense then came away with a 3-and-out. A huge stop. Then on the punt, Dustin Boskus was interfered with. The Angelo State guy, it looked to me like he had anticipated Dustin Boskus letting the ball go, and when he saw Dustin Boskus actually going to field the kick, could not stop himself, ran into Dustin Boskus. Now, unfortunately, you still cannot take full advantage of the penalty, because Jordan Noyle, the Kansas State transfer defensive back, was called for something like conduct. I'm not sure what he did or whatever it was off the screen. So instead of starting at the 40, at the 30, I started hard at their own 45. But it did not matter, because Will Collins led the offense 72 yards in 8 plays, capped off by another touchdown pass to Dustin Boskus. Again, had a whale of a game as always here. 10 catches, 160 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He tied it, so that score made it a tie game at 34 all with 2:35 to go. The defense could get another stop. And then in 2 plays, UCO took the lead. The first play on that drive was a 17-yard pass to McKeel Hall. You remember, has come on late. I believe he made All-American All-Conference, third team All-American All-Conference. And so they had a 17-yard pass to him, and then on the very next play, McKeel Hall also beat his man for a 53-yard touchdown. Now, what was impressive about this is I think he dragged the defender at least a good 12 to 10 yards into the end zone. Showed some great strength right there. Was definitely a huge play, because, you know, it gave UCO the lead for the first time since early in the second quarter there, when they were up 10 to 7 at that point. And so that gave them the lead with a minute 12 left, and defense, I give them credit here. It was looking kind of dicey there on that drive. They had on a 4th down, and they let Angelo State convert. It was unfortunate, because it was a 4th-and-long, because on the 3rd down, Justin Stewart and Colton Lindsay had a combined sack on Payne Sullins, and unfortunately they could not get the stop on 4th down. But it did run the clock run the clock down to 9 seconds. So you could think Angelo State could have maybe got 2 plays off there if you ran it right. You know, if you throw a quick pass, to the sideline or something like that, you would still have a chance to get another playoff. But this is where the defense came up huge when it counted. I mentioned this man before on the podcast numerous times. I interviewed him on the podcast. My man Eli Hooks in his final game. came up big, especially on the final play of the game. Payne Sullins was forced to roll to his left because of the pressure that Eli provided. And so by the time he escaped that, there was maybe 2 seconds left. So he kind of had to heave the ball into the end zone. He you know, when you're rolling out, your field is limited, and that's what happened. He threw it to an area where there was more white shirts than blue shirts, and the senior linebacker from CHA, Cole Lindsey, came away with the interception, and it sealed the deal. And I was stunned. Stunned would definitely be the initial reaction after that. I mean, first I'm happy, watching it, and I'm screaming, and then I'm sitting there and kind of realizing what just happened here. What I just witnessed was by far one of the greatest comebacks I've ever seen in my 22 years on this planet, and it really attests to this team. I have a quote here. From Coach Nick Bobek here, and I think that this sums up not only the game, but I think the season. He says, "Just never quit. We could have rolled over and gave up when we were down, but that's not Central Oklahoma. That's not this team. I'm proud of these young men for looking adversity in the face and doing something about it." And again, that could be said about the season as a whole. You enter the season, you lost three program stalwarts in Chad Stabler, JT Looper, and Josh Crockett. You lost Aaron Williams, you lost Sam Noble on the offensive line, two stalwarts there. Then you have Carson Smith had to mentally retire. He's one of the best nose guards in all of Division II football. Addison Stack was a guy that you had hoped to have back there in the secondary, and he has to medically retire. You know, you have Stephon Robinson, all conference corner that got booted off the team a couple of weeks before the season started, and then you couple all that with the 0-2 start, including a very tough loss to Kearney in the home opener there, and you could easily have folded, that's again to what Coach said, that's not UCO. That was not this team, and they rallied. They finished 8-2 down the stretch, despite having to use three different quarterbacks. They upset number 4 team in the country pretty handily. They posted 3 straight shutouts for the first time since the 70s, and the second time since 1940s. You can't. This team, I can't say enough about the character of this team, the character, the leadership, not only the coaches, but the seniors here. It just says a lot about the program that Bobek has built here, where it gets many obstacles, and then not to mention here, Derek Loxton, unfortunately, losing his foot in that train accident there. I mean, there's a lot of things that this team could have used as an excuse to pack it in and say, woe is me, we had some bad luck this year, but they didn't do that. A lot of teams don't respond the way they did, and it really just hit me after that comeback right there. That team is special. This team is special. You think I'm the team saying when you're 8-14 that finished fourth in the conference. This team is special. If you had looked, game 12? If you had looked 10 games ago at this team and told me that 10 weeks from that 0-2 start that they'd be where they are now, I would have thought you were lying. The character of the team. I cannot say enough about the character of the team. A lot of plays were made in the comeback that are made by seniors. You got Eli Hooks. Eli had a sack. He had a forced fumble. He had the key pass rush on that fourth down. You have Colton Lindsey, another senior right there. Had a game winning interception. You had Noah Hammonds on the offensive line. Noah Hammonds is a guy here that played not only tackle but center some in the game because Ben Ralston went down early, unfortunately for him. And so then they threw out redshirt freshman Alex, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Alex Eckler from Edmund Memorial. And then for a couple of series there, they had Noah playing center, and then they moved Noah back at the tackle. And I got to say, Noah in the fourth quarter there did an immaculate job on Marcus Jones, again, the man to the game with 15 sacks. Did not let him get close to Clay McKitt, I mean, to Will Collins right there. That is another senior. You know, there was just a lot of plays made by seniors who did not want to lose this game. I just cannot say enough about that. And I also cannot say enough about the defense there. You know, after allowing 24 straight points, you know, like I said, in Atlanta, you would say that it was pretty because it was not. There was a lot of deep balls that was converted there. You know, Barry Higdon, you know, the senior, hasn't put a whole lot this year, started, and he got beat some. Malik Walker got beat a time or two. Kobe Underwood got beat, but it did not stop them. They did not get too down on themselves. And they were able to in that fourth quarter, come up with stomp after stomp after stomp after stomp. And the offense was able to capitalize on the stomps. Will Collins here again. You know, Will Collins here, 25 of 43 for 367 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception, with all 4 touchdowns coming in the fourth quarter. I mean, the man caught fire here is a understatement. Was also the leading rusher with 31 yards on 13 carries, despite 4 sacks. You know, Angelo State, you know, they very tough team. You know, they entered at 6-5, but they definitely have some talent there. Their quarterback, Payne Sullins, I'm gonna tell you, Payne Sullins is a legit quarterback. It was, I believe, between 15 and 25 mile per hour winds in Waco, and throwing into the wind, Payne was throwing some quality passes there. He finished 20 or 34 for 379 yards, 1 touchdown, and one pick. I have mentioned coming in that what concerned me the most about Angelo State on offense was indeed the pass game, because you had 6'4" receiver Kiki Chisholm, who did his damage. 7 catches for 159 yards and one touchdown. And then the other receiver they have, A.O. Lawson here, had 3 catches for 93 yards. And the difference in that fourth quarter was definitely the pass rush. There was definitely the pass rush there. Russ Pickett, the coordinator, started sending a lot of pressure there. They even got creative here. They moved linebacker Alex Figueroa, who also had a forced fumble in the game. They moved him to end some. They sent a variety of different looks, and the pressure there really helped out, because when Payne had time to sit there, Payne was picking UCO apart. But to UCO's credit, they made the necessary adjustments there. They got the pass rush, and you could tell it made him uncomfortable. Payne had to step up in the pocket or roll to the right or left, really limiting himself and his options. Noble Lyman was another senior, had a heck of a ball game with the pressure. You know, again, just the leadership of the team here. You know, I can't say enough. You know, again, what I saw out there was just pure heart. You know, just pure scrappiness, just never say die attitude. You know, I wish I could have been there. You know, seeing it on TV was nice. You know, it actually was on TV. It was on channel 714. If you have Cox cable, it was on TV. It was nice. But I wish I could have seen that happen in person, because that really just as a student, as a student and as just a fan of the sport, it was a very proud moment. I did shed a tear or two, because that just what they did, just digging deep. I mean, you imagine you're down 18 points here, and then You know, you, I mean, you're down 15 entering the fourth. They scored a field goal here pretty early into the fourth. You're down 18. Again, you could have packed it in. But what do? They reel off four straight touchdown drives, coupled with, you know, essentially five stops in a row. You know, it definitely just shows the won't sit die attitude of this team, and I could not be more proud of this team. It's been an honor and a privilege to cover this team. I will definitely cherish this team for quite some time because excuse me here. What they did was pretty incredible. It was excuse me. Definitely inspiring. I tell you what, for anybody who said that, you know, and you can't do anything, you can't overcome obstacles, I think you can look at this team and really say that that's not an excuse, because the obstacles this team has overcome this year is definitely a lot, and I'm happy for them. I'm happy they could end their careers the way they did. You know, posting back to back eight win seasons for the first time in 14 years. You know, this is their second straight bowl win. You know, again, we got Clay McKenzie etching his name into school history, becoming one of the only, I think, two or three players to have 4,000 career yards. You know, you have 17 all conference guys. You know, just I could not be happier for the team, for the coaches, again, it has truly been an honor to cover this team, and I will cherish this for quite some time. Looking at the rest of the stats here for the game, if we're looking here, what the key factor here was UCO's defense again. Held Angelo State to 3 of 13 on third downs. Anytime you win, you can win the third down battle, you can definitely win the game. And they also held them scoreless on two trips in the red zone. So, you know, anytime you can win the turnover battle and win the third down battle and the red zone battle here, you got a chance to win the game. Some other stats from the game here. Dante McGee by far had his best receiving game of the season. 3 catches, 42 yards, 1 touchdown. Daniel Bizzell, 3 catches, 36 yards. That 1 pass for 58 yards. Colton Lindsay, 9 tackles, 1 pick. Draymond Christian, another senior, had 8 tackles, 1 tackle for loss. Justin Stewart, 7 tackles, 1.5 for loss, 1 sack. Oshae Harris played another very key part in this game. 7 tackles, one for loss, 1 fumble recovery. Malik Walker had 6 tackles. A half loss. You know what I mean? Eli, 5 tackles, 1.5 loss, 1 sack. And then Alex Figueroa, 3 tackles and a forced fumble. So again, if you missed this game, and you know, if you thought OU Texas was good, you thought Alabama Georgia was good, they have nothing on what I witnessed Saturday. It just was a very prideful moment being a Bronco and witnessing that. Now, as I said before, I had a plan to have a season recap, so I'm not gonna really recap the season. I kind of somewhat did in my little spiel there, but I'm not gonna recap the season yet. But I do want to end here on some stats, because again, as I said, I'm still working on that end of season review special, hoping to get that to you guys next week. I'll try to get it done this week. It's dead week. For those of you who don't know, it's the week before finals, so I kind of have some lull time here. I might be able to squeeze in the interview and get that done, so hopefully that does happen this week. If not, If not, then we might push it back, or I might just go with my plan B on the recap. But either way, they'll be out hopefully next week, if not in a couple of weeks. And then, you know, that'll be it for the rest of the year. We'll come back in January. And I got some more specials I have planned. So to wrap this thing up here are the final stats of the season. So UCLA's offense struggled early on in the season. No one's surprised at all there. Finished actually averaging 30.2 points per game. Was actually kind of impressive there given the rough start they had early on. They averaged 156 yards a game on the ground, 4.1 yards a carry, 19 touchdowns, 250 yards a game passing with 25 touchdowns to only 8 interceptions between 3 quarterbacks. Averaged 406 yards a game, scoring 47 touchdowns, had a time of possession for 30 minutes 16 seconds, completed 38.6% of third downs, 50% of fourth downs, had 9 fumbles, lost 6 of them, had 21 sacks, had 47 trips in the red zone, scored on 37 of them, and had 27 touchdowns in the red zone. The opponents only had 20 points a game, that I have mentioned entering the season, that the defense was going to be key, and they did not disappoint here. Allowing only 20 points a game, again, now I'm sure those 3 shutouts help out tremendously on that average, but still, and the defense did do their part there. This year, I cannot say enough about that unit, especially in the secondary, where early on in the season, it definitely was the weak link in the defense. But to defensive backs coach Nick Graham, to his credit there, he got that unit that unit going, and it was actually a strength. Down the stretch, and so that also was a key part of the turnaround as well. They allowed 160 rushing yards a game, 4.1 yards a carry, 18 touchdowns. Only allowed 196 yards a game passing with 10 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. So again, I do want to give a huge shout out here to Coach Graham, not only for the Twitter follow last month, but for the turnaround there in the secondary. I know we had a lot of new faces. We had a lot of new transfers in there, and I think he did a spectacular job of getting that unit together there down the closing stretch. And in total, they allowed 356.9 yards a game and only 30 touchdowns. Again, just very solid numbers here from what you expect from a senior upperclassman-led unit. This is a unit that I mentioned coming in, had the most experience returning. A lot of seniors on that defense there. A lot of people that have played a lot of meaningful snaps. And it definitely showed this season. They allowed 30% on third downs, which is a great number. 53.5% on fourth downs, 4 16 fumbles recovered, 8, also had 21 sacks, only allowed 31 trips in the red zone, with 24 of them resulting in scores, and 18 of those being touchdowns. So I cannot say enough here about defensive coordinator Russ West Pickett and his unit there. They did a spectacular job this season, as did Christian Hood, as offensive coordinator Christian Hood did too, having working a lot of new faces with injuries, and kind of having to plug guys in, and still executing offensively enough to get 8 wins on the season there. So they both deserve a lot of credit for the success of the team this season. Now, looking at individual stats. Offensively here, Will Collins ended up being the leading passer in only 7 games. Threw for 1,759 yards, 14 touchdowns, 4 picks, 64% completion percentage, 251.2 yards a game. And was also the third leading rusher with 282 yards and 2 touchdowns. Chandler Garrett, in 9 games played, through for 596 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 picks, 45.5% completion percentage, and then ran for 277 yards and 4 touchdowns. And the Keats, who started the first 3 games before suffering that season-ending knee injury, 572 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception, and 62.6% completion, and had 111 rushing yards. And let me just tell you this: as good as Will Collins has played, yeah, as good as Will Collins has looked, Keats Calhoun, people forget, I hope no one forgets, but Keats unfortunately got hurt right before the team went on that run. But let me tell you about Keats, though. I vividly remember that Pitt State game, and despite the pressure, Keats did everything he could to keep you showing that game. And let me tell you, Keats, the legitimate quarterback. I just looking back, you know, UCO is blessed here. You know, on some level, now, and the talent is not. So don't kill me too much here. But it almost reminds me of when Texas Tech had three NFL quarterbacks at the same time. They had Baker, Patrick Mahomes, and Davis Webb. It's similar here, where you have three quarterbacks who could start at a lot of other at a lot of other programs right now. They each. Can win you games. Chandler Garrett beat number 14 team in the country. Will Collins just executed one of the better comebacks probably in program history. And then Keats, Keats was off to a nice start, before his injury. So I'm curious to see this battle in the spring, because it's gonna be one heck of a battle here. I mean, I'm sure Chandler Garrett, regardless if he loses out on the job next year, will still have his role in that wild bronco, as man Peter Agnes calls it. But I'm curious now, because you can win with all three of those quarterbacks. So I'm curious to see who emerges in the spring as QB1, because none of these guys did anything to lose the job. As a matter of fact, well, Collins only got the playing time because of injuries to both Calhoun and Garrett. So, you know, you have a third string that's doing this. I mean, that the talent in that quarterback room is spectacular. I that right there, to amass that much talent, the way they did that, is again a testament to their recruiting process that staff has there, and the development that the staff has done, because that right there is a battle definitely to watch moving forward into the spring. Now the leading rusher here, Clay McKenzie, 172 carries for 696 yards, 8 touchdowns, averaged 4 yards a carry, and then had 21 catches for 191 yards and 2 touchdowns. Then Justin Curry, the Sanford transfer, is kind of banged up this year some. Has 72 carries, 424 yards, 4 touchdowns, 5.9 yards a carry. Now, most of this came in that shellacking on Northeastern State in the second half, when he pretty much destroyed them single-handedly. This was a beautiful sight, by the way, a truly beautiful sight. And then finished with 8 catches for 15 yards and 1 touchdown. Now, I would suspect now, with Clay McKenzie graduating, unfortunately, again, an all-time program great, that his role will definitely be expanded. I'd like to see more from Bruce White. Bruce White was, you know, from the walk-on last year that took the team by storm. He was hurt. He was limited to only 3 games. And then Sabor Daniels, who actually played some in the bowl game. I'm glad to see him back. He's also in the mix, as will be redshirt freshman Peyton Scott from Sand Springs, who was the Oklahoma Gatorade Player of the Year last year, and then Tucker Pauley from Bigsby. So there's some talented backs waiting their turn next year. So I'm curious to see who emerges there along with Curry. Then out wide, you got Dustin Boskis here. And Dustin Boskis, again, was a guy that was the 4th option last year. Battled some injuries, some academic issues. Came back, had 2 touchdowns in his first game back, and especially with the injury of Leelia Curry, about 3.5 games in. Dustin Boskis, to his credit here, rose to the occasion. Finished the season with 6-7 catches for 909 yards, 7 touchdowns, averaging 13.5 yards a catch. And 75 yards a game. Dustin Boskis here. The man was clutch. Anytime we needed a go-to pass, Dustin Boskis was there. To me, Dustin Boskis. This season reminded me of Ryan Broyles from OU. Ryan Broyles, my all-time favorite Sooner, and probably one of my all-time favorite players of all time. But even though he always came away with the clutch passes there, that is the way that Dustin Boskis was this season. Just coming in, just making big catch after big catch. And that's another guy as confidence could have been shot after that Kearney loss. When on that fourth down, he kind of is the pass was soon behind him, was tipped, but he still could have made the catch, and he could have let that get to him. But to his credit, he did not. He rebounded and had a great season, and he's a guy that'll also be back next year too. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Dustin Boxers can do in his senior season. And then Mikael Hall. Now I do have to give a shout out here to Mikael Hall. I was critical of Mikael Hall in the early part of the season. I think he only had like 3 catches through the first 3 games or 4 games. But to Mikael Hall's credit, the light turned on and he made an all-conference team. He finished the season with 37 catches for 698 yards and 3 touchdowns, averaging almost 20 yards a catch. Definitely, I can definitely see why Bobek raved about him from the moment he signed. The man is a big-time talent. He's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the hands. I think this is all about the consistency from Mikael Hall. But the future is bright for him. I have to say the future is definitely bright for Mikael Hall. I think we showed Mikael Hall's big playability in that bowl game with 3 catches for 109 yards and 1 touchdown. Now Mikael Hall can take over games. And he's another guy that just is a retro freshman. I'm looking forward to seeing over the next 3 seasons. As is Tyrone Howell, the true freshman from Ida Bell, who in that spring scrimmage that I went to was beasting in that scrimmage. Had a very nicely caught fade in the end zone. Literally feet away from me right there was a nice catch. And Tyrone Howell's guy here that I'm sure was supposed to be redshirted this season, but because of the lack of production from the receiving corps in the middle of the season there, started and had 2 monster games. I know the man had 100 yards against Lindenwood there. Finished his season with 13 catches for 242 yards. And 2 touchdowns, averaging 18.6 yards of catch. And then we cannot forget about Elliot Curry, who was going to be the go-to guy this year. Fortunately, had some shoulder issues. Was limited to only 3.5 games. But still managed to have 17 catches for 266 yards and 3 touchdowns and 15.6 yards of catch. So he will also be back. So the top 4 receivers all return. Now 2 are departing here, and Ronald Monroe, I call him Big Play Monroe because it seemed like every catch the man made for a period of time was touchdown, almost like the UCL version of Lee Morris right there. Had 11 catches for 185 yards and 4 touchdowns, and then Ronnie Turner Jr., the UAB transfer, that had a breakout game against Emporia on senior night. Had 17 catches for 162 yards and 1 touchdown. And then Dendrani Bazell, man, I'm still high on here. He also has a bright of future too. Had 8 catches for 128 yards and 16 yards of catch in 8 games. And then Dante McGee, the all-conference ace back, had 7 catches for 108 yards and 1 touchdown and 15.4 yards of catch. For those of you who don't know, Dante McGee was signed out of UConn as a running back. So Dante McGee has the skills to affect the pass game. I like to think him moving forward. You'll be seeing McGee used more in the pass game, almost like Caleb Moss was last season. Caleb Moss was a very good H-back. I believe he was a 4-year starter at H-back. And, at least played all 4 years at H-back, but was definitely a solid H-back. And Dante McGee is in the same mold. Now, defensively here, the leading tackler of the season was Colton Lindsay, the senior from CHA. Had 91 tackles, 5 for loss, 1.5 sacks, 4 interceptions, which led the team. 2 forced fumbles and 1 fumble recovery. Then safety O'Shea Harris. And Longgrove, the junior, has 74 tackles, 3 for loss, 2 picks, 8 pass breakups, which led the team. 2 forced fumbles and 2 fumble recoveries. Then Chris Poga, another junior linebacker from Putnam City. 61 tackles, 6.5 for loss, 1 sack, 3 pass pickups, 1 forced fumble. Dylan Hall, the JUCO linebacker out of NEO, 54 tackles, 2.5 for loss, 1 sack, 2 pass pickup, and then Christian, the senior, I believe out of I think he's also from Panama City too. 51 tackles, 4 for loss, 1 sack, and 1 pick. And then leaders go here, my man Eli Hooks, the senior of Deer Creek, was a team leader in sacks. 4.5, had 29 tackles, 7.5 for loss. So shout out to my man Eli right there, leading the team in sacks and tackles for loss. He's gonna put it out there again. So my man Eli putting in work. Justin Stewart, another senior, was second with 3.5 sacks, 4 tackles, 6.5 for loss. And then Noble Library, the senior from Dell City, 2.5 sacks, 22 tackles, 3.5 for loss. And then Tyrell Cummings, the tackle, had 2 sacks, had 34 tackles, and 3 for loss. And then, as far as picks go, Cole Lindsey had 4. O.C. Harris, 2. Kobe Underwood was a guy that the coaches were high on that I said had a rough scrimmage. But I could see the potential there in his size because he is about 5'9". I felt like could be some matchup problems, and there was. But Kobe Underwood is another guy that got thrown into the fire in the first 2 games and then was replaced by somebody transfers. But rebounded nicely when called upon this year. He finished tied with Harris here for second on the team with 2 interceptions. Also had 27 tackles, 1.5 for loss, and 3 pass breakups. And then O'Shea Harris led the team with 2 forced fumbles. And then as far as special teams go, Alex Quevedo kind of had an average season, 11 of 16 on field goals here. Long of 45. He was 2 of 2 inside of 20. 5 of 7 from 20 to 29 yards. 3 of 5 from 30 to 39 yards. And 1 of 2 from 40 to 49. He did not attempt anything past 49. So, you know, Corvino has the leg. I just think we got to have some more consistency there from him. I know Coach had mentioned that when I talked to him in the spring, that he would like to have seen more from him. But he did have a kickoff now, though. Did on 69 kickoffs, had 25 touchbacks. So Corvino does possess a strong leg. And then the punter here, Jay Tedesco, 59 punts this year, averaged almost 40 yards punt at 39.3. Had a long of 61, had 3 touchbacks, had 22 down inside the 20, and then 8 of 50 or more yards, and then had 1 punt block. And then in the return game here, Dustin Boskis on the punt returns had 18 of them for 217 yards, 12 yards return, along with 46. And then in the kickoff returns here, he had 9 for 220 yards, 24.4 yards return with a long of 72. Tyler Holland, the special team coordinator, his unit again, you know, was solid, especially on coverage. Now, I do have to give him a shout out here. The kick return coverage from the Washburn game on down was nothing short of spectacular. Another guy here that I feel like we need to be mentioning right now is Caden Mendenhall, the OSU transfer, I believe, from Santa Fe, was a special teams beast on the coverage. Made quite a few tackles down there, and you cannot forget the fake field goal that went awry, but still worked. But my understanding was just supposed to be a pass, ended up being a run. Result was all the same, it was still a first down. So I do have to give Coach Holland there some credit on the special teams unit, because that was the coverage unit right there was just spectacular. And then to wrap up the podcast, I usually start out with other UCO-related news, but because of the exciting finish to the bowl game, could not contain that. So we will finish the podcast here with some sporting news. As you know, soccer had ended the season, unfortunately, in the Central Regional to each other, Missouri. But there is some great news on that front, because Katie Killian was named Conference Commissioners Association Ron Lynn's National Player of the Year. She was also a first team All-American. So shout out there to Katie Killian, who literally killed it this season. I mean, you did not know, she literally, I mean, just was, I mean, was a straight up beast on the soccer field this season. And so I'm glad that Sydney Abel was at least able to end her career as an All-American and National Player of the Year. And then Kelsey Gordon was named a second-team All-American, and Kelsey East was named a third-team All-American. So a huge shout-out there to head soccer coach Mike Cook and his team on a historic season, and his three All-Americans. Volleyball, again, it was kind of an unfortunate end to their season in the MIAA tournament to a loss to Kearney. But Taylor Bevis, the senior from Kansas, was named honorable mention All-American. So she's now, that makes her the first three-time All-American in program history. So again, a shout out here to head coach Eric Miracu and Taylor Bevis there. I mean, another great season. And then finally, in some basketball news here, the men were in action this past Thursday. When they beat Oklahoma Christian 82-72, Adarius Avery. Darius Avery scored a career high 32 points and 11 rebounds for the Loyola Chicago transfer. If you recall, Loyola Chicago was the team last year that made that Cinderella run to the tournament. But Avery had a career game. The guy from Memphis, the senior. So men's team is matches the 5-2 on the season here, and it seems to be coming around nicely. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. It's longer than I had thought, but you know, when you just you witness one of the greatest comebacks that I've ever seen, you know, that kind of happens. So again, the plan is if I can. If all works out here, we will have the season recap next week. Hopefully, it's plan A. If it's not plan A, it'll be plan B. But I'm sure you will enjoy both. And then after that, we will be taking a Christmas break of sorts, and then coming back in January with some specials that I think you all will like. So that's going to do it. My name is JG Smooth, and I'll talk to you all later.
Bye, have a beautiful time.